Translation: My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. Please repeat. My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. Purport: One who fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is freed from all sins. Aham tvam sarvapabhyo mukshayishyami. From the very day or moment he fully surrenders to Krishna, even the most sinful person is freed. Nonetheless, as an example, Jamadagni advised his son Parashuram to worship the holy places, because an ordinary person cannot immediately surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is advised to go from one holy place to another to find saintly persons and thus gradually be released from sinful reactions. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Parashuram, the Lord's Warrior Incarnation. Amagyanatamrindasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitamina tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual masters are opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I therefore offer my humble obeisances unto them. Namam Vishnupadaya Krishnapstaya Bhutale Srimate Hridayananda Goswami Nita Namine. Namam Vishnupadaya Krishnapstaya Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swami Nita Namine. Namam Vishnupadaya Krishnapstaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nita Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachanti Shtrani. Vakam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yad Kripata Maham Vande Shri Gurundina Tarnam. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodato Gaudadaya Pushpanvanto Chitro Shanda Tamonado Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chava Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayama Udirayat Nashta Prashu Badrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevya Bhagavatir Tamashlake Bhaktir Bhagavati Naishtaki Ragyo Murda Bishiktasya Vado Brahma Vadat Guru Tirtha Samsevaya Chamho Jahyanga Chuta Chetanaha. My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. What struck me, first of all, about this whole situation is the uncanny parallel with another section of the Bhagavatam, which is when Sringi curses Parikshit. So in both these episodes we have a situation where a king is being effectively put to death, and in both these situations we have these very powerful brahmanas who are just cultivating their Krishna consciousness in the forest. They've just got their hermitage. It's a very isolated place in the forest. And in each case, that brahmana has a son who is also very powerful. And in each case, that very powerful brahmana is very displeased with their son's behavior, very disapproving. In the case with Shamaka Rishi and Sringi being the son who cursed Parikshit Maharaj, Shamakarishi said that you have reacted out of all proportion to the offense that was committed. Really, Shamakarishi did not even consider it an offense. He could see this greater arrangement going on. It's in the Bhagavatam, it's always explained that there is a immediate cause of something happening and there's a remote cause of something happening. Krishna is the remote cause. Ultimately, not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's sanction. But there are players in the field and they're sort of causing the actions and reactions to be going on. And the more elevated a person is, the more that they're in touch with the remote cause and seeing that as being more of the greater significance. So Shamakarishi was very disapproving of Sringi. He said, you have very unnecessarily cursed this king who is a great saintly person. The fact that he had this snake garland put over him by Parikshit Maharaj was really, to him, completely irrelevant. He didn't even notice that it had happened. He was in such a trance, he didn't even notice that it had happened. And Sringi basically was overcome with false ego, emotion. He wasn't equipoised as a Brahmin is meant to be. A Brahmin is meant to be very equipoised and very in touch with the Supersoul, as I was saying, in touch with the remote cause, and then they're able to respond in kind. He didn't respond in kind. They say that the punishment must always fit the crime. But this didn't happen in this case. The offense that Parikshit Maharaj committed was so minuscule, minute, in comparison to the reaction. And the same thing happened in the verse that we're reading today. But in this case, the offense or the crime is greater than what Parikshit Maharaj committed. This king, Kartavirya Arjuna, has stolen the Kamadhenu cow of Jamadagni. And that cow was, and Jamadagni had a very, apparently, I listened to one class of Radna Swamis, and he was describing how in different shastras it explains that they had a very affectionate relationship and a very intimate and affectionate relationship. So it is a very dastardly act to steal that cow, and the motive was not good either. The Kamadhenu cow was very pleased that all her offerings were being used to glorify Krishna and to actually benefit the world. And she was very displeased that she was now being stolen just for the selfish motives of this person, of this out-of-control king. But nonetheless, Parashuram's reaction of going to Mahishmati and killing all of Kartavirya Arjuna's soldiers and then killing Kartavirya Arjuna, That's a very severe reaction, very severe response to the offense. I was thinking, to react like that immediately is very severe. He could have first of all attempted to negotiate. There's so many other ways he could have. He could have stolen the cow back, and then there's so many other ways he could have responded. But this is my philosophical speculation on this, because it just occurred to me when I was contemplating this verse. Then, see, Parashuram was born in a Brahmin family. He was brought up a Brahmin, and he displayed all Brahminical qualities. But this reaction of going to Mahashmati and killing everybody is not very Brahminical. So where did this all of a sudden come from? Where did this fierce Kshatriya spirit all of a sudden come from? So my philosophical speculation on this is that it came from the curse of Rishika Muni. Because if we look back a little further in this chapter, Rishika Muni, he brought two oblations, to one for his wife, one for his mother-in-law. And the oblation for his wife was so that she would have a Brahmin child. And the one for the mother-in-law was so that she could have... I'm not sure, it doesn't say actually what sort of child she would have. But then the mother-in-law changed the oblations around, and then Rishika Muni was very upset and said, as a result of this, your son will have fierce Kshatriya spirit. But Satyavati was upset with this, and she pleaded with him, and finally he relented and he said, okay, your son will be a Brahmin, but your grandson will have this fierce Kshatriya spirit. So Satyavati's son was Jamadagni, and her grandson was Parashuram. So that fierce Kshatriya spirit came out all of a sudden in Parashuram, I feel, because of that curse. And of course we know that Parashuram, he started off a Brahmin, then he became this fierce Kshatriya, and then he finished as a Brahmin again. So in yesterday's very edifying class, Terakadamba was explaining how this moving from one varna to another is not something that is like a common thing. But then Parashuram is not a common personality. So this is the first point about how these parallels are there, and how both sons reacted out of proportion to the offense. Jamadagni is upset with Parashuram and saying to him, you should have been forgiving. Forgiveness is the first quality of a Brahmin. And he's pointing out that to kill a king is even more of a wrong thing to do than if you kill a Brahmin. The king is the protector of all the citizens. And he's, in a sense, the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The citizens depend on the king. So by killing the king, he's not just killed a single person. If you kill a Brahmin, you've killed this individual. But if you kill the king, then you've affected the whole kingdom. You've thrown the balance of the whole kingdom. There's far-reaching consequences for doing that. So Jamadagni is very disapproving of his son's behavior. And he's chalking out this, you know, process or program of atonement. So on this question of forgiveness, in this class that I listened to of Radha Swami, there was a very interesting exchange, because throughout the class, Radha Swami was, in his very beautiful and very elegant way, glorifying forgiveness and pointed out Ambarish Maharaj and his forgiving attitude towards Durvasa Muni. He pointed out Prahlad Maharaj and his very forgiving attitude towards Narsingadev. And he pointed out Jesus Christ and his very forgiving attitude towards those who victimized him. And then at the end, when he asked if there were any questions, one of his disciples put his hand up and said, you've spoken all throughout the class about forgiving, but what about standing up and protecting yourself and defending justice? Kind of burst out, like, because do we just turn the other cheek? Someone's committing an offense, and do we just be passive and just let this person walk all over us and take advantage of us, and do we just forgive them and then let them abuse us? And He was more or less coming from that place. And Radhana Swami said, the answer to that is, he thanked him for asking that, because he said, I can sort of start to balance this up a little bit. And he said, the answer really is that the correct response is always a balance. As we know, the philosophy is achincha beta beta tattva. It's simultaneously one and difference. And he said, the response is a blend of Jamadagni and Parashuram. It's a blend of the two. Parashuram's response was, you know, how dare he do that? You know, I'm going to sort him out. And Jamadagni's was, forgive, you know, be forgiving. So it's a mystical blend of the two. He said that we should not allow anybody to abuse us or, you know, walk all over us. But in our hearts, we should be the well-wisher of that person. And we should harbor, and this is the point that he made very, very strongly, we should not harbor any vengeful mentality towards a person who's wronged us. We should not harbor any vengeful mentality. We should always be their well-wisher. There's an issue at stake. As soon as that issue is resolved, then there's full forgiveness. And he was saying that until the issue is resolved, then we internally remain their well-wisher, and externally we just, he was saying that externally then... you know, we don't allow them to continue to abuse us or offend us. But internally we remain their well-wisher. And that made me think of a point in the Bhagavatam of how it was explaining that our body, if there's one part of the body that is ill, then all of the body will make adjustment to accommodate that ill part of the body. It will adapt, and it will take care of that part that's not well, because the body is a whole. The part is an integral part of the whole. So in the same way, we are all related to each other as parts of the whole. And in one sense, just as the body goes to the rescue of any part that's not well, that's ill or injured, in that same tradition, we should be in the mood of going to the rescue of any other part and parcel that is ill or injured. In other words, any person who's conditioned, who's a conditioned soul, we should actually go to actually assist them, because all the different parts make up the body. All the living entities, all the jivas, are the parts that make up the single body of Krishna's marginal energy. We're all related to each other in the same way that the parts of the body are related to each other. So, you know, if there's a part of my body that's ill, all the rest of the body can't ignore that. And all the rest of the body can't experience full happiness of good health until that part is recovered. So, if there's a conditioned soul who's suffering in illusion, in that same sense, we can't fully be peaceful and resolved and feeling 100% Satchitananda until we help that person also. Yeah. So, and this is exemplified beautifully by Prahlad Maharaj in that verse, Prayena Deva Munayosva Vimukti Karma Monam Charanti Vijanesa Pratanishta. And then in the third line he says, Naitan Vihaya Kripanan Vimamuksha Eko. Vimamuksha Eko, I don't want to be Eko, singularly liberated, while all these Kripanans, these fools and rascals, are suffering. I don't want to be you know, liberated and free from suffering, or yeah, I don't want to be liberated basically if all these people are suffering, because I know something. In the fourth line, it says Nanyam. Nanyam Tvarasya Sharanam. Last bit? Brahmatonu Pashye. Thank you. Because I know something. I know that you cannot be happy unless you're Krishna conscious. It's not possible. It's not possible to be happy unless you're connected to Krishna. And unless you're Krishna conscious, it's not possible to be happy. So I know that. These people don't know that. So it's a crime to liberate me and then leave these poor people without any means of helping themselves. So it's a wonderful spirit there. And that's the spirit of forgiveness. Now, the other point to keep in mind is that when this person said, what about standing up for yourself? Then Rana Swami, he perceived something very subtle. He said, it may appear that Ambarish Maharaj, you know, he got, you know, he was being attacked by Durvasa Muni. And Prahlad Maharaj was being attacked. And Jesus Christ was being attacked. And it may appear that they were just taking it on the chin. And it may appear that they were just being passive. But Rana Swami was saying the point that they actually weren't being passive. They were not being passive. They were being fierce in another way, in the way that they were taking shelter of Krishna. They were being dynamic in the way that they were taking shelter of Krishna, and then just allowing Krishna to accept and to resolve the situation. You see, there's one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says, Bhakta Svabhava Agya Dosh Ksham Kari. So Bhakta Svabhava means the nature of a devotee, Agya Dosh, when they're insulted or when they're offended, is Ksham Kari, that they're forgiving. But Krishna Svabhava, now Krishna's nature, Krishna Svabhava Sadhu Ninda, when there's Sadhu Ninda going on, when there's somebody giving one of Krishna's devotees a hard time, sahite na pari, he doesn't forgive them. He doesn't let them off the hook. So, in that way, Ambarish Maharaj is taking shelter of Krishna, and the others are as well. And it's not that they were thinking, okay, I'm not going to do anything, but Krishna, please slam these guys, you know, don't let them off the hook, you know, give them what they got coming to them. They weren't thinking that way either, but they were simply accepting Krishna's plan for that situation, for how that was to... you know, and then this brings in Tatenu Kampam Sutsamikshamano, that a devotee is always thinking that, well, what's happening to me? There is a remote cause. You know, this person is the agent of the remote cause, which is Krishna's plan to purify me. So let me just simply continue taking shelter of Krishna. That's the mark of true piety. When under duress, you continue to take shelter of Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada explains this, that he uses the example of in the Second World War, when all the mothers were praying to God to please protect my husband or please protect my son. And then sometimes the husband or the son didn't come back from the war. They were killed in the war. And he said, those mothers and wives that were pious, they just took greater shelter of Krishna. And those that were impious thought, well, you know, he didn't answer my prayer, you know, he mustn't be there, or, you know, what sort of a God is that? So the impious ones turned against, and the pious ones. There's always true colors come out in moments of truth and under pressure. So It's very interesting how Parashuram more or less had two hats. He had a Kshatriya hat and he had a Brahmin hat. So that's very interesting. And what I was, the other part of the my analysis and meditation on this verse is this notion of, you know, we all have our conditioned nature. We're conditioned by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And according to that conditioning, that places us in a particular varna. So those who are predominantly in the mode of ignorance, they're going to be more in the Shudra category. Those who are in passion and ignorance, they'll be in the Vaishya category. Those who are in the mode of passion, they'll be in the Kshatriya category. And those who are in the goodness, they'll be in the Brahman category. And so there are certain lines of distinction between these categories. And when you cross a line, Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaura Nitai Ki Jai, ISKCON Guru Vrinda Ki Jai. So we can kind of get a, you know, if this was like a technical, theoretical explanation, you could sort of theoretically say there's a line here dividing the Brahmanas from the Kshatriyas, and there's a line here dividing the Kshatriyas from the Vaishyas, just as there are theoretical lines that divide goodness, passion, and ignorance. They're theoretical. So when a Brahman crosses the line and starts behaving like a Kshatriya, or when any Varna crosses the line and starts behaving like another Varna, there's going to be problems. There's going to be disharmony. So, as Terakadama was saying yesterday, that these boundaries which designate the different varnas, they allow a person to accommodate their nature. It's a safe environment, and it's an environment which allows a person to get on with the process of making advancement. It allows them to kind of get on with the purification and understanding who they are spiritually beyond their conditioning. So when you cross over, there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita which says, Shreya Svadharma Viguna Paradharma Svanustita Svadharma Nidanam Shreya Paradharma Bhayavaha. It's making such a strong point about this, that you should not cross the line. You should stay within the prescribed duty that you have within your varna. Because we are who we are. We all, Krishna has made each individual very unique. So why should somebody who's completely magnificently unique want to try to be somebody who they're not, somebody else? Why should you try and be somebody else? Why not work on just being yourself and raising your own self-realization to its highest potential? That's a much better project than trying to be somebody else realized, than trying to be somebody else. Because no matter how good you try at being somebody else, whoever that somebody else is that you're trying to be can be themselves much better than what you can trying to be them. And we can be ourselves much better than anybody else can if they were to try and be who we are. If somebody's trying to imitate me, I can correct them that you did this part wrong, you did this that part wrong. I'm the authority on who I am, as long as, you know, but of course, we don't know who we are. We're still in the dark about who we are in terms of our constitutional spiritual svarup and nature. So the Varnashram system is there to help us move towards that. And one thing to be guarded against is, like I was saying, if there's these different varnas, and okay, if you're a Shudra, then this is people who are predominantly in the mode of ignorance. There's certain symptoms there. Now, in each of those varnas, whether Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahman, whichever one we're talking about, the objective should be the same, which is to come to higher consciousness. Just because someone's in the Shudra Varna does not mean that that's a license to act in the mode of ignorance. That person in that Varna should be cultivating the mode of goodness. All the Varnas should be cultivating that mode of goodness. Because it's only by the mode of goodness that you start to see things as they are. The Bhagavad Gita explains this in the, I'm not sure which chapter, it's possibly the 18th, understandings in the modes of nature. So in the mode of in the mode of goodness, it says, I might need Govinda to help me on this, but dharma adharma yapashyed. Karya karya vyavastito bandha moksham chayaveti buddhisaparta sattviki. So one knows what is religion, what is irreligion. Karya karya baya baya. One knows what is one's duty, what is not one's duty. Baya baya. What is to be feared, what is not to be feared. And bandham moksham chayaveti veti, to know. Knows the bandham, what is bondage, and moksham, what is liberation. You know all of these things. There's an accurate understanding of what all these things are. Whereas in the mode of passion, yaya dharmam adharmam cha, karyam cha karyam eva cha, ayatavat chayaveti, something like that. Ayatavat chayaveti. Prajanati, thank you. Ayatavat prajanati, buddhisaparta, rajasi. So, it mentions like karyam chakaryam, that it says your duty, and what is your duty and what is not your duty. Ayatavat prajanati. The prajanati, the knowledge, is approximate. It's not accurate anymore. It's approximate. It's almost there. There are discrepancies. Someone in a mode of passion, you can imagine their mind is moving too fast that they can't quite contemplate and get the right focus. It's always a little bit out of focus. The person in a mode of passion is always a little bit out of focus. He can't quite get the exact perspective of what's what. And then it says in the mode of ignorance, adharmam dharmam itiya manyate tamasavritaha sarvartan viparitam syat. So in the mode of ignorance, they've got it opposite. They think that religion is irreligion, they think that irreligion is religion, and they think that what's to be feared is not to be feared. What's bondage is they think is liberation. For instance, people in the mode of ignorance think that liberation is getting drunk or getting high. But that's actually bondage. They've got it always opposite. So one's got it right, one's got it approximate, and one's got it wrong. So no matter what varna you're in, we should be cultivating the mode of goodness so that we can see things as they are. It's very important. It's a little bit like, at any given point we can see a certain distance. We can see to the horizon. I'm not sure what the distance is to the horizon. Something like 7 miles? I'm not sure exactly. But you can see to the horizon. But if you're in the mode of ignorance, then you can't see the horizon. Things are blocking you. You're tolerating things in your consciousness that are blocking your vision. You know, ignorance means you don't know, you can't see things because you're ignorant of what's there. Then if you're in the mode of passion, you may be able to see the horizon, but you're being distracted all the time. And so you don't always get to the horizon. Whereas when you're in the mode of goodness, if there is something blocking your path, you realize this is actually redundant, and it is not needed for my project of self-realization. Let me get rid of it. Let me not tolerate it. So then that's removed. And distractions, that's just also an impediment. So let me not be distracted. And then you can actually see the horizon. When you have that space, it says in Kali Yuga that in Kali Yuga, space is an opulence. When you have that space in your mind, when you've removed the clutter of the mode of ignorance, and you've removed the distraction of the mode of passion, then you've got space to meditate and see things as they are. And when you get to that, when you move towards the horizon, then new vistas will always appear. And that's how advancement is made. So these are a few points to consider in this verse. And I'll open the floor now if anyone has any questions or comments.